40 years ago this coming week, well, for my money, is one of the best television shows in history, made its debut. Talking about Taxi, of course, launched so many careers and continues to be one of the most iconic shows in the history of the medium. Our friend Mark Freeman of The Hollywood Reporter recently spoke with most of the principals, actors, writers, directors, and did a great oral history for The Hollywood Reporter. Mark, it's great to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me.
Like everybody else, I was shocked in reading your piece to remember that Taxi was only on the air for 5 seasons.
You know, Danny DeVito said that that's one of the things that people come up to him the most and comment about the show, is that it's only for 5, and really, the last 2 years, it's buried, 1 year at ABC and 1 year at NBC. But if you have iconic episodes, I guess you don't need to have many more years than that.
Well, that's for certain. And, boy, you talk about the actors, but the creative team behind it, too. James L. Brooks, Dave Davis, Jim Burrows, who might be the most successful director in the history of television comedy. Just those folks alone would have probably been enough to assure this was going to be a successful show.
And two people not mentioned as well who were co-creators were Stan Daniels and Ed Weinberger. Mm. And the four of them, Davis, Brooks, Weinberger, and Daniels, were pretty much the biggest and most successful behind-the-scenes people in television, and were working at MTM, and they came over to Paramount and developed the show. So he already had that behind them. And then Jim Burrows, this was his first big gig. He was doing periodic episodes for Bob Newhart and Mary Tyler Moore, but they really let him free on this one, and the actors just totally responded to him and set him off on a brilliant career.
And the impetus for the series, as you point out, was a piece about a cab company that was originally in the New Yorker.
Yeah, so they owed ABC 2 series. And a few years before, when they were still at MTM, Brooks had read an article in the New Yorker describing these drivers who had day jobs, night jobs as taxi drivers, so they could pursue in the daytime their careers and aspirations. And he loved it, held on to the idea, got Grant Tinker to buy the idea, who's the head of MTM. And when they went over to Paramount and needed a series, he went back and asked Grant if he could buy that back, those rights, and Grant just gave it to him.
You know, it's interesting, too. Sometimes to be successful, you've got to be flexible. And it sure looks like the creators of the show kept that idea in mind, because when you look at all of the actors who were cast, very few of them fit the character descriptions that they had going in.
Yeah, there was, I didn't go at length at it in the article, but they were looking for a wide range of people, Alex Rieger being the center, the maypole that everyone has to dance around. And they did a lot of work for him on the coasts before landing on Judd Hirsch. But some of the other ones, like Tony Danza, his character was originally supposed to be a heavyweight Irishman who was going to be somewhat spacey based on getting too many punches versus somewhat simple, which Tony Banta is. And then Elaine, they had wanted someone about 10 years older, and she was going to have a teenage daughter, but they just fell in love with Mary Lou when she came in, and she's 25. And they ended up, if you watch the series, she ends up with 2 young kids, who are both under 10.
And what was great about the show in so many ways, it was not a jokey show. It was a show about characters and their situations, and that allowed the humor quite often to develop organically.
You know, I think that's not unique to that show, but it is unique to television's best shows, that they don't do set-up punchline, they don't have those catchphrases that the character has to say every episode, and then the audience laughs if they are laughing, and it's not a sound laugh track. But basically, the best shows develop character, and the things that the characters say and the way that the characters move are always true to the character, but there's humor within that because of expectation. Jim, Reverend Jim, being a spaced-out druggie, he doesn't say jokes. He says things that a spaced-out druggie would say, basically, of that era, who had survived the 60s. So there's just humor in the everyday and the natural versus forcing jokes out of a situation.
We're talking with Mark Freeman of The Hollywood Reporter. So many great characters, but Louie, my gosh, what a wonderful character. And for Danny DeVito, what an opportunity to wrap your arms around a guy that could have been someone people hated, and yet as mean as he was to everybody, you saw that deep down there was a heart there somewhere in Louie.
So Danny had said in the interview with me, and if you read about him online, that some of his friends were frowning on him to do television. Jack Nicholson, he had just worked with on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which incidentally is where they got Christopher Lloyd from, too, through Danny's recommendation. Mm. But the thing was, when he read the character, he saw the potential in it. They had all these quirks to his character, living alone with his mother, basically, loving these Mel Torme albums, having all these little quirks, which he even said when he set up the cage in the show, he put up posters of Taxi Driver and got signed by De Niro, things he thought the character would do. And rather than be a one-dimensional, I won't use any of the bad words, rather than be a one-dimensional, not nice person, or despicable character, they wrote for him the other side, moments where you had compassion for him. One of the biggest ones, which isn't in the article as well because the story ends up being too long, is, and it's going to sound bad in the setup, he puts a peephole in the woman's bathroom, and Elaine discovers that, gets him fired, and there's this conversation at the end which won him his Emmy Award, where basically he apologizes more or less to get his job back, but she won't take it, and then he tells her this humiliating experience of having to shop in the children's section of stores. And when he's done with that really touching speech, he says, is that how I made you feel? And she said, yes. And then he gives a heartfelt apology. And it's just an example of the other side of Louis, that he is a human, three-dimensional person, even if he leans towards being despicable most of the time.
Yeah, and they took so many chances like that. And also in the piece online, you feature one of the most memorable episodes, and that's Elaine's fantasy of a lullaby of Broadway. It's just absolutely brilliant.
So two things about that I discovered that were interesting. One is Andy Kaufman loved Broadway music and dancing, and Mary Lou said that she used to talk to him all the time and share her stories of Broadway and teach him dance steps, and that he was thrilled when they got to do an episode where he, Tony, and Judd dressed up as the Andrew sisters. So she came from a Broadway background and music, loved it, and it was always her biggest dream to get to do it in an episode. And if you watch the clip, you know, there's some fun direction in there, too, how they're dressed in everyday clothing, walk by one of the poles in the garage, and they come out in tuxes as they come out the other side. A little clever editing thing. And the other thing that I mentioned, I think, to Jim Brooks when I was talking to him, is if you watch the scene closely, even the movements the characters make while dancing, as if they're almost hypnotized, fit the character perfectly. The way Louis kind of prances around, the way Alex kind of waves his arms, like, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? I don't know. But it fits everybody, the physicality, in addition to the musical number.
And no question about that. And that, to me, that's what made it so great. You mentioned Andy Kaufman. He was such a force of nature, but he also at times could be a difficult co-star. Not everybody enjoyed those moments with Andy or with Tony Clifton.
Yeah, Tony Clifton, people will remember if they saw Man on the Moon. You could write a book about Tony Clifton in and of himself and the episode that occurred on the show. And what I was trying to do in the article was touch on different aspects of that story. And I went over it specifically with Mary Lou about that, because in the skeleton version, he had written into his contract, even with a separate dressing room, that Tony Clifton, his alter ego, horrible Vegas comedian, was going to get a guest starring role. And as a performance artist, it was always set up to fail. But the odd thing about it, if you think about it, is rather than do this in front of an audience, a paid audience, or at a club. He was basically doing it to the cast and crew around him because they were the only ones who were ever going to get to see it.
Mm.
So he does his shtick, and the actors, they were furious. Jeff Conway basically wanted to kill him. And so they shoot Monday to Friday. By Tuesday, any cuteness of the thing had worn off with his dressing up and demanding new lines and so on. He was supposed to play Louis' brother, and they were going to be debating about what to do with their mother. Anyway, when they decide to fire him, Ed Weinberger calls up Andy and tells him, "I'm going to have to fire you." And Andy basically says, "Can you do it in front of everybody?" and sets up another performance, which he then plays up by coming the next day with two hookers and sits at the table and says, "They're going to be in all the scenes with me." And then this whole thing unfolds. And Jim Burrows found it fascinating. He was telling people around him, "You're never going to see anything like this again, so keep an eye on it." And but some of the actors, most of the actors weren't that thrilled with it, although Tony Danza, incidentally, filmed it all. He had a Super 8 with him that day,
right.
But he subsequently has lost the film.
Oh.
Everybody's given him flack for that from the cast since then. He said he lost it in moving from houses. So.
I love the story that you tell in the Hollywood Reporter piece about Carol Kane and the length she went to learn Latka's language.
Yeah, so if you listen to the language, there are definite rhythms to it. And in the script itself, Latka's lines were written in English that he then translated into whatever his language was and the rhythms of it. So she needed to figure out that rhythm. And he had already developed this foreign man person prior to Taxi, so he was very generous to share that character with her, and he took her to a Chinese restaurant, and he basically said, "We're going to order. You have to order in the language, and I will translate for you to the waiter." And so they practiced several hours at that table doing that, and she never spoke a word of English, and he translated everything she said, and that was the beginning of the perfection of her character, which added a lot to the series over the last 4 years.
Only 5 years of Taxi, but safe to say, Mark, that it influenced so many subsequent shows, especially those with a workplace setting.
Yeah, you know, if you think of, you could make a lot of arguments about what Taxi influenced, because it's a large ensemble group, so you could say a show like Friends wouldn't be possible without it, but you could also then say a show like The Office wouldn't be possible without it, because that's a workplace environment with a lot of characters, and every character needs a distinctive voice. As Carol Kane was saying, it doesn't matter how many characters you have in a show, but if you pull a line of dialogue out of the script and you know who says it without seeing the citation in the script, that's a good script with good characters that you can develop and build off of. And the best shows on TV since then, Frasier, Seinfeld, The Office, Friends, all those kind of shows have very distinctive characters with large ensemble groups, with unique relationships with each other, put in real situations that we can all empathize with and see how they respond and find humor in that.
Mark Freeman, his new piece in the Hollywood Reporter, Taxi Turns 40, A Wild Ride Down Memory Lane with the cast and creators. It's a great read, some wonderful memories there and some terrific links to video as well. And speaking about iconic shows, you've got another piece coming up soon in Vanity Fair about Frasier, right?
That is true. I did an oral history as well with Frasier, where I got to talk to a lot of people on that one. It's everyone except, unfortunately, John Mahoney, who had passed away slightly before I dived into this. But the Frasier family is so close to one another. And when I say close, I'm saying like godmothers and adopted parents and so on. They passed me through from person to person. So you have guest stars, the cast, behind the scenes, directors, the writers, the creators. And it's a great story. I'm hopefully be out in the next week or so.
Can't wait to see that, too. As always, Mark, a pleasure for us to talk with you. Thanks so much for making time for us, and maybe we can catch up with you before too long and talk about that Frasier piece in more detail.
I'd love to, and thanks for having me as a guest again. I always look forward to talking with you.
Thanks again. Mark Freeman, The Hollywood Reporter, remembering Taxi here on Downtown.